Welcome, everybody. Welcome again to a Thrive Hangout event. We're really looking forward to our day with you today, and I just wanted to begin with a few announcements, mostly to let you know that you're being recorded, the whole event's being recorded. So if you participate, you're agreeing to that. We make this available for people who can't be on the call today and people who join later. Also, we're going to be sending out an evaluation at the end of the event like we always do, and it's super helpful for us if you take a moment and fill out that event and give us your feedback and input. This whole event today, focusing on current events and interpreting the news, is the result of feedback we got from you saying that this is an event you'd like to have, and so here we are doing it. So it really is about us getting to know you and having a dynamic, interactive live time together. So please take a moment to do that. And the way this works is if you would use the chat window to communicate with each other and share resources as we're going along, and use the Q&A window to get questions to us. And if you have any kind of technical issues, if you could write to events@thrivemovement.com, that's the best way to go. Mitch is there, poised and ready to help. And just a little courtesy favor you could do is if you get help with a tech issue and then it's solved, if you could let us know that it's solved, that would be helpful, because then at the end we know whether people, you know, have these issues ongoingly or whether we were able to fix them. And the way it's going to work is when you want to ask a question or make a comment or participate on video, Goa, our host here, will make you a panelist. You'll click on a little green camera icon next to your name. Goa will unmute you, and then it will just take a second, and then you'll be on the screen. So if you want to be sure your camera's up and running in advance, that'll help. And then when you do speak, please be succinct so that it's, you know, a minute for your questions and 2 minutes for your comments, and that way a lot of people can participate. And last, I just wanted to say that WebEx is working on a way to make all this accessible through iPad and iPhone and Android and all that, but it hasn't happened yet. But they are in process with it, so that will be coming. Anyway, again, welcome, and I'm going to hand this off to our resident full-time current events sleuther, Foster.
Hi, folks. This is very exciting for us to get a chance to just be with you in a much more casual way. We really want to hear from you today. We want to hear what's on your mind. We want to hear what you're questioning. We want to hear what your insights are. One of the things I've learned from working with Kimberly is that I'm much smarter when my mind is combined with hers. And when our minds are combined with yours, we're all going to be smarter. And we've really come to the conclusion that intelligence and open-mindedness are two distinct and complementary skills and strengths. So the more we can listen to each other and really entertain each other's ideas without, you know, just try them on without having to buy them, but just try them on and see if it augments our own understanding. So that's a lot of what today is about. We especially want to focus on nurturing critical thinking about current events. Now, we're all immersed in this world where we're just overwhelmed with information coming in all the time, and everyone of all ages is having to deal with, how do I cope with this? How do I get good information? How do I pace myself in getting information? What can I do about it? How can I collaborate with other people? So a lot of critical thinking about current events for us is learning to swim upstream into the assumption, not just taking for granted what anyone, particularly mainstream media, says, but really asking ourselves some particular questions whenever we're looking at or reading media. And I want to share some of those questions that we find most valuable with you today, so that we can then use these as lenses through which to look at whatever current events you want to discuss. So I think what I'll do is just read off the questions, and then later on I can put them up on the screen to refer to as we're looking at particular events. So the first question that we suggest when we hear about something is ask ourselves, okay, what happened? What actually happened? You know, did a plane crash? Did a building fall down? Did someone get shot? Did someone have a huge technological breakthrough? Whatever it is. And some examples of this would be a Kennedy assassination. Something definitely happened there. And we know that President Kennedy got killed. Another is 9/11. We know buildings came down and people got killed. You can look at the same things for Sandy Hook and Pearl Harbor and the Reichstag fire and, any of these major events, the sinking of the Lusitania. We know something happened, but the second question that we recommend asking is, what do the powers that be want us to think happened? Do they want us to think that a lone crazy gunman just had a vendetta against President Kennedy? Do they want us to think that a few Muslim box cutters extremists with box cutters brought down those towers? And on and on. Question three, why did it really happen? Well, some say Kennedy was trying to restore honest currency and wind down the war in Vietnam. Some people didn't like that. 9/11, some people have come to the conclusion with a lot of information that the shadow government and secret societies were plotting to scare Americans into war and to give up many of the liberties. So going on to question four, what is the result that they want from this event? So in the case of Kennedy, we can look back at what actually happened, and the CIA was no longer having to deal with the obstacle of Kennedy's restricting their intrusions on our lives. The Federal Reserve got to continue its ways without getting sound backing for the currency. The war expanded in Vietnam. In 9/11, we see the results that it ended up being used as an excuse for invading Iraq, where we took over their central banking system and made sure that the petrodollar was still used for oil purchases. We stole their gold. The shadow government stole their gold. A lot of people made a lot of money off of war profiteering. The Middle East was further disrupted. The Patriot Act came in. There was more funding to create the Department of Homeland Security. The Military Commissions Act was passed. Habeas corpus was basically disbanded. And the War on Terror was established. So, fifth question out of six, who benefits? Good place to look is the bankers, the government, the military-industrial complex, those promoting a new world order. And the key to finding out who benefits is very often, as we described in Thrive, follow the money. And then finally, number six, what can I do about it? And I'm not going to say a lot about that today. We've said a lot in the film, on our website, and I really want to explore that as we go into the current events of the day. But we especially want to encourage people to use these questions and then to look through two main lenses. Here at Thrive, we really look at an event and then we look through the lens of the global domination agenda. Does this somehow serve that agenda? Some examples of that are that the global domination agenda, as we recognize it, there are a collection of sick people, of sociopaths, who have organized very cleverly and seem to clearly have an agenda to dumb us down, to keep us afraid, to make us sick, to keep us in debt, to keep us fighting against each other, the whole divide and conquer, to be censoring ourselves and each other, whether it's fighting between branches of Congress or between races or genders or countries, whatever it is, ultimately giving our power more and more over to the government, to the state, which is controlled, as most of you know, by the financial elite from their secret society. And then when we're looking at particularly mainstream media, it's critical to understand where does their funding come from? What is the ideology that they support? So if you're watching Fox News, you know that their agenda is to reinforce the conservative agenda being in power, as well as to pay off their advertisers. And if you're looking on CNN or MSNBC, you know you're looking through the same kind of lens, but now it's the liberals who want to claim the power to tell us what we can and can't do with our lives and with our money. So finally, the last thing I want to say is that the second lens that we try to look through at Thrive is the lens of the Torus. And by that, I mean to look at an event and see what does this event or the agenda behind it have to do with wholeness? Because wholeness is what the Torus represents. Whether it's the wholeness of an atom or the wholeness of a planet, the wholeness of the health of a human being, a galaxy, a solar system, whatever, the Torus is the pattern, as far as we can tell, the sole pattern throughout the universe by which healthy systems are sustained. So as we've looked at the more than 200 issues that groups in the Thrive Network, the Thrive Solutions Hub Network, there are more than 1,030 groups now in 100 countries around the world. And as we look at the issues that they're taking on, it seems that virtually every single one of those issues is a breakdown in the wholeness of a natural system. Whether it's the economy or the media or energy or political systems, it's an intentional breakdown in those systems perpetrated by the usual suspects. So the key is to recognize that, to recognize humanity is not a mistake. We just need to recognize what the wholeness of a system looks like, and then take every step that we know how and are capable of taking to restore that wholeness. So that's a key theme for us throughout every single current event, every single major issue in the world. So before diving into specific issues, what we'd like to do is actually take a poll and hear from you which issues you're most concerned about and would most like to talk about today. So, Goa, if you could put that poll up, we've listed 10 of the seemingly most popular current issues, and we'd like you to vote which one of these is the one that you especially would like to talk about today. That doesn't mean these are the only issues we'll talk about. You'll be welcome to bring up other issues as we go along. But take a look at these, and we'll take a minute to vote on these, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah, and in addition to these, I'll just say it's through the Q&A that you can submit additional topics that you'd like us to address. And really, we have the whole time here to be just taking on whatever it is that is up for you. So we'll get to those in addition.
And also, some people have submitted a number of questions on our subscriber portal in the comment section. So we've collected those questions, and we'll be looking at those as well.
Okay, so the poll is up, and I'm just having a little bit of trouble sharing the results. Just trying to give you a moment. Okay, Foster, they're ready for you.
Okay, so we're particularly looking at vaccines, net neutrality, and geoengineering. Okay, so let's start with vaccine. I say no answers, 37%. Okay, so let's start with vaccines, because as we've been traveling around, talking to people, seeing on our own social media and so forth, it's just a huge issue that especially parents are dealing with. And Kimberly, I would love it if you would start this. Obviously, Kimberly and I have dealt with this, you know, for many years with our own children. And Kimberly, in my opinion, was really one of the people that I know who caught on earliest to many of the challenges. So I would love it, Kimberly, if you would address this issue, and then we'll open it up.
Sure. You know, I think, first off, I just want to say that I think it's one of the most difficult decisions for parents, because there's nothing that you care about more than the well-being of your children. And, you know, if you don't vaccinate your kids and they get the disease and die or are harmed, you're going to feel absolutely horrible. And if you do vaccinate and they end up with, you know, any of the myriad of problems that can result from that, you're going to feel horrible and responsible. And so it's really, to me, I had my kids in the 70s, and it, you know, at the time I remember just being, I knew that it was a really big thing to be injecting some poison into my children, but I didn't, you know, the research wasn't quite as abundant then for me anyway, but I was able to figure out enough to know that I needed to get information, that I really needed to do the work to get as many facts as I could, and to follow the money and figure out, is there any financial incentive for me to be led to believe one thing over another? So I guess I want to say that to me, one of the most important things is that we have a conversation that's respectful with each other for those who choose to vaccinate and those who don't. Because apart from, you know, my belief now is that there is a huge agenda to create big problems through vaccinations on a whole range of levels. But that doesn't mean that people choosing to vaccinate are, you know, doing so with ill intent. I think it's just a matter of really getting informed and then sharing that information with each other. And, you know, to understand, for example, lately, I know I have grandkids and daughter-in-law dealing with all this stuff, and you know, the whole notion of herd immunity and the fallacy of that, and the fact that, you know, if you're vaccinated, you shouldn't be worried about being exposed to someone who isn't vaccinated, because the idea of a vaccine is it protects you from that, right? And yet here it is, just a huge amount of pressure that's coming down with a lot of hostility behind it. So I just want to frame it to say that I think it's really important that we understand that whatever anybody's doing, besides those at the top, I think people are motivated to do what they feel is best for their children. And then we have to just get at the facts to figure out what, in fact, that is. So that's just the frame I would put on it. And then, you know, I don't know, Foster, if you want to
share. I'd like to add a few points, and then we'll open it up. So if we look through the lenses of the questions that I was mentioning before, the first one was, what happened? So obviously there are serious diseases out there in the world. And then there are vaccines. So what would the would-be controllers want us to think is happening around these diseases? Well, one thing we need to watch out for is if someone else has an agenda that they want us to first of all, be willing to submit to having our bodies involuntarily invaded. And mandatory vaccination is unfortunately spreading across the country in schools. They don't hold you down and stick it the needle in you yet, but in more and more schools, they won't let you come to school unless the child can't come unless they've been vaccinated. And now there is an adult immunization plan that is gaining a lot of momentum. And this is exactly what I've been concerned about for a long time, is that they literally federal government would pass a law saying every adult has to have this vaccine. And now all of a sudden, they're not even just invading our homes, they're invading our bodies. And I'm not saying that there isn't any value in any vaccine, but there's two different discussions. One, what's the value of the risk of the vaccine? And two, what's the risk of turning over the power over our bodies to some sort of abstract body of authoritarian individuals, you know, who think that they should be able to tell us what we can and can't do with our bodies. There is, and then there's a report that has recently come out. First of all, some CDC whistleblowers got caught talking on the telephone about how they suppressed information about the connection between vaccines and autism, and that has all come out now. And then secondly, there's something called the JCVI, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunization. And their report has come out recently exposing that the dangers have been hidden by the big pharma companies. And as Kimberly was referring to before, there is no proof of the effectiveness of the so-called concept of herd immunity. So it's a huge issue. And, you know, fortunately, in Kimberly's and my immediate family, we haven't been adversely affected directly in any way that we know about. But we do have a number of close friends and people in the Thrive Network, literally whose children, who took their children to the doctor. Doctor said, you need to get this immunization. They jabbed them. And within a few hours, the lives of these children had been changed. And they've come down with autism or serious diseases or brain damage. And that's a reality that is sweeping the world right now. And you can look for it online. There's horrific collections of pictures of children damaged by vaccines. And so it's a very real danger that every single parent needs to take into account. And as we were saying before, we also need to be careful that once again, a scare tactic is not used to take away our rights and turn them over to the medical establishment, to the government, to the would-be controllers. So I think I'll leave it at there for now, and I'd love to open it up and just get other people's questions, concerns, insights.
Yeah, and I have a feeling the way this is going to work is we'll take on other questions, we'll come back to these. Whatever ones we raise, we can discuss it at any time. I just think the thing about following the money with the vaccines is really critical. There's a movie we've recommended to our network before called Bought, and I really appreciated that because it really shows the configuration of the pharmaceuticals and the testing and just the way the money flows in this one. So I think that's a really, really important part is that all information about it should be transparent and available to everybody to make the choices that they want to make. And you really have to go out of your way to get that. Anyway, we'll always post any of the resources that we find most useful and then welcome other people's experiences and insights into it. So, I don't see other vaccine-related questions, but I see some other interesting questions. So how about if we...
Well, before we go on from that, let me also mention a couple of other resources. I recommend that people Google the name Sherry Tenpenny, who's been researching this for many years and was just starting a tour of Australia trying to educate people about the dangers and the necessity to make a free choice. And her whole tour was shut down over there. Another guy named Leonard Horowitz, who's a Harvard-trained medical specialist, who's probably done more research on the history and following the money of vaccines and the potential hidden agenda behind that than anyone that I know. And then there's another movie. I think the title is For the Good of the Group or For the Good of All. Anyone remember the exact name of that, which also goes into this same dilemma of mandatory vaccination?
Yeah.
So raise your hand. If you have any comment or question on this, just raise your hand on your digitally on your screen, and we'll recognize that, and we can bring you in.
I see Maud Pollock wants to talk a little bit about the mandatory issue.
I think that I'm looking at my list. It looks like Shannon Weckman right next to I don't see Maud's hand raised.
She just put a question in the Q&A.
Oh, okay. All right, great.
That was in the Q&A. Maud submitted a question about vaccination.
So, okay. Goa, can you bring Maud in?
You bet.
So, Maud, do you remember the process that I described there about...
Do it again.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. And, okay. And can you click the little camera icon next to your name there?
Oh, no, 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 no camera. No camera.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Another time.
Okay.
it wasn't really a question. It was a comment. It really isn't about whether we should be vaccinated. It's what they're trying to do, that FDA questionnaire that's been posted, that we have to reply whether we're for or against vaccines. And Dr. Rima LeBeau put a reply that we send to our Congress people and everybody, and to be careful because, you know, they do these things like you vote for no, and then they switch it over and it's yes. So
yeah.
It's a big conundrum because, I mean, that's the last thing I want is my body vaccinated. I'm into homeopathy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
So
yeah.
That's all I have to say, you know, as far
Thank
as
you, Maud. I appreciate the insights, yeah.
I think the mandatory issue is a huge part of it for adults and children alike, because once you agree that the government, the pharmaceuticals via the government should have more control over your parenting or your body than you can have yourself, that, you know, obviously that's the slippery slope that we're working to avoid here.
Right.
So
well,
remember earlier, go ahead, Mon.
I was going to say, do you have any idea what we could do to put this out? I put it on my Facebook. I put it on every network that I know on my Facebook, you know, what that is happening and what they can do, and not to sign right away, but to sign first. I mean, I can put it on your Facebook because now I'm officially a member. you know, is there any suggestions what else we could do? Because it I'm not scared. I believe we're very powerful. I'm a spiritual teacher, retired myself, so I know a lot about these things. But it's to wake up the ones that are sold the agenda that vaccinations are healthy and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's a great question. And one other approach to it is just local organizing. Whether it's parents in schools where the children are being banned from going to school unless they have these toxins put into their bodies, you know, the other parents wouldn't like it very much who are having their children vaccinated if the vote went in favor of non-vaccination, because they should be free to make their own decision. So local organizing in the schools, keeping your email list, whether you're working locally on your own or through the Five Solutions Hub or whatever, on other causes like pesticides, GMOs, chemtrails, and so forth. When people come together and organize around something like that, we're encouraging everyone around the world to keep those email lists and then just take on one issue after another and contact each other to find out who has the medical skills, who has the scientific skills, who has the media skills, the legal skills, and so forth, to take on one issue after another in your local area, as well as you know, through the internet on a larger scale.
Well,
but remember, go ahead.
First, I just want to say I'm 81 years old, so I'm not into schools anymore, but I am very active in my community.
Yeah.
And my town board, and at the moment our big fight is the smite meters, and we
yes.
have, and it's a, and that letter that you talked about at the last conference with Sasha Stone,
yes.
that is being a friend of mine composed that letter. So
right.
I was thinking, what's the thought of possibly, you know, writing that kind of a letter to the people at the FDA and saying, you know, you're pushing this. But you know what? We're going to hold you personally responsible if we become sick.
We're going to have.
I think that's. Go ahead, Kimberly.
We're going to be having a whole event, actually dealing with what we brought up at the last one and about a new, very effective technique for holding high-level officials who are otherwise not personally accountable, to hold them personally accountable for the harm that is caused as a result of the actions of their corporation or the government. And that is coming up at our next event on March 14th. Our live event will be all about this whole notion of personal accountability and techniques for very effective action with all of these issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could write the letter to our senators and congressmen and say, here, you vote for that, and I get sick, and you're responsible. I mean, I'm thinking
That's
of
right.
using that letter from my town board. We're trying to get them to get your Roundup out of our area and
yes.
you know, holding them accountable in that way.
Let me expand for a moment on what Kimberly was saying, because we're going to be having on our next event on March 14th, the Thrive Together event, we're having this special guest. His name is Cal Washington, and he's been one of the major pioneers investigating the question, by what authority do you claim to rule us? Because that's really at the basis of all of these violations. And he did years of research and really found out the truth behind the scenes of why and how they claim this authority, and found out that, of course, it's actually invalid. But he really found the way to go about not only naming that authority is invalid, but of legally holding these perpetrators liable. And financially viable as well. And so his particular issue, he's been helping several of our friends who are leaders in the smart meter movement. He's been helping them particularly with the smart meters. And he's the one that I think composed the letter that I think you're talking about. And so when he started doing that, over the last year or so, he's had more than a dozen top-level government officials, executives, CEOs of corporations, including the head of PG&E in California, all stepped down from their job in order not to incur this personal liability. So this is huge knowledge, because it applies to every type of violation, and we'll be going into depth in that 2 weeks from today.
Yeah.
That's absolutely great, because that's what we need, and then we can
that's
become
right.
truly we can hold them accountable, and they,
well, yeah.
and they, and because they're employees of the corporation, so they're employees of the corporation, and they're going to be held accountable personally.
Well, we'll
exactly.
get into that. So thanks for bringing it up. I want to mention another resource here that Cynthia O'Neill is recommending. She says there's a new documentary, Business of Disease. And Sherry Edwards with Bioacoustics, who has huge amounts of information on vaccines. And Cynthia, and it says soundhealthoption.com. I suggest you put that in the chat window, because that is made available for the archives as well as for everyone on the call today. So if you have other resources that you recommend, please post them for each other, and then we can carry those forward for the network, because it really makes the really makes a big difference, obviously, to be informed. And I do want to say this thing about the solutions that Maud brought up. It's not super simple, but it is super effective. And I personally see it as the golden ticket here to being able to cut through with a level of effectiveness to bring solutions on a lot of the issues, including geoengineering and a lot more. So we're going to be going in depth into that, because it takes its own time to unpack it, and we'll bring Cal on to do it. But it will apply to vaccines as well, in my opinion.
And okay. I say
thank you, Maud. That's really helpful.
Yeah, I say one more thing. Foster, you posted an article. I know this is a little off target, but I've been trying to reach you for a year about fear. And I developed a method to mastering feelings and releasing fear. It's an energetic method. I was a healer and a consciousness teacher for 24 years in Europe, and I developed this method, and I'd like to share it with you, because it's a super easy method. It's an energy removal method. You pull the feeling out of your system, and then the feeling is gone. I used to teach therapeutic touch, so I'm energy. You know, I work with fields. I've published a book, all kinds of stuff. Perhaps somehow I could get in touch with you more directly and discuss this with you.
Why don't you write to info@thrivemovement.com and send it to us that way so we can move on here and let some other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, send it to info@thrivemovement.com and mention that that we talked on this call and that we definitely wanted to see that information. And also, if you have any links, you can post it in the chat today and everybody can access it.
Yeah, I'll put my website.
Okay, great.
Vaccine that Penny, who doesn't want to come up, but offered that's very, she says, vaccines seem to me to be in the gray area when we say we want a principle of doing no harm to others, but many people would argue that not vaccinating could harm others because a child who isn't vaccinated could then spread the disease. This is an example of getting accurate information and where these resources that we've posted can help elucidate the fact that it doesn't actually work that way. So because you can argue that back and forth without accurate information, as soon as you get to the facts, it really helps shift the conversation to a higher level. And that's something that we really, that was actually one of the main motivations for Thrive, was to just kind of shift the conversation to get out of speculation and begin to share some facts. Okay. Spiri, do you want to come up? Spiri Andrews, and then there are others raising their hands who we can get to.
Yes. I'm not sure if my audio is working, though, is the problem.
It is. Your audio is working.
Your audio is working.
You can.
Oh, very good.
And remember
Thank
to
you.
Have your question go to be at about a minute if you can, just so we can have a lot of people participate.
Absolutely. I'm not sure where I find my.
A little.
Where I click on.
Right of your name.
Click on my participants thing here. There it is. Okay. Yeah, well, it was about 6 or 7 years ago when the live bird flu virus was found in those vaccines that there was a World Health Organization was demanding that people be mass vaccinated and so forth. And I was part of a European-American team where I personally contacted 3,800 plus county sheriffs. There is a legal fact that the county sheriffs can decide, they have the right to say that the vaccines cannot enter into their county. Did you all know about that?
No.
And it's a way of stopping the vaccines at a county level because the county sheriffs have political power and they can decide what happens or doesn't happen in their county, just as used to be the case with states. But the, of course, many sheriffs are much more, you know, in the working in the interest of the people than are the is the government.
Yeah.
Sperry, I would wonder, though, I mean, I appreciate their intent to protect people, but I would wonder if that's not just the flip side of government telling people what they can and can't do. Because if someone wanted to have vaccines for themselves or for their children, it seems like it wouldn't be fair for them not to be able to access it because some government agency had decided that it shouldn't be available.
Well, I mean, they give away these vaccines for free. You can get them at Walmart or... And you know, if somebody really wanted to get vaccinated, I'm sure they could. But to use our group elected officials on a county level to say no to these pharmaceutical companies and to the government, I think is a place to take a stand.
Thank you.
But you know, it's interesting because there's a town in Texas that has just started offering free vaccinations at McDonald's. So when you go to McDonald's for your daily fix of GMO and aspartame and bovine growth hormone and food color and MSG and pesticides and high fructose corn syrup, now you get a bonus with your Happy Meal. You also get mercury, squalene, aluminum, and live viruses. How's that for a deal?
You know,
I mean, what about the Gates Foundation and their push to vaccinate the world? I mean, there's so much going on here. I forget the lady's name who was so courageous with that that ploy to mass vaccinate the world 7 years ago. But I mean, it's clearly that they derived the virus from the 1908 plague of that particular bird flu, and they reinvented it. They dug this guy up in Alaska and recreated it so they could mass vaccinate everybody with the most deadly flu vaccine that had ever occurred on the planet. You know about all that?
Yes, I do. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Well, I'm just thinking that, you know, we could talk about vaccines for 2 hours. And at the same time, what we're really looking to do is to talk about how do we make sense of all of the information that's coming our way. Because, you know, everyone on this call probably has a slightly different source of information and a slightly different take on it. And exposing ourselves to this array of it so that we can think for ourselves and share with each other is really an important part of it, because each one of these subjects can take all of our attention, you know, depending upon which we're most impacted by or passionate about or whatever. And so I'm curious if when you, like, what's the source of information, you know, where you're getting your information, Spiri, and how do we share that as we're going? Because I know for us, we, you know, subscribe to every imaginable, you know, Council on Foreign Relations input and the progressive information, the libertarian and the voluntarist and apolitical, whatever it is, you know, we try to get all different sources of information so that we can actually see what's a pattern, what might they be wanting us to believe, what's any overlap, what are the facts, what's the truth out of any one of those perspectives that we might be able to glean. And it's that process of critical thinking that it seems to me is really what it's about on any one of these issues. And so, you know, how do we come upon the fact that this herd immunity is in fact a fallacy and that they're making up these cases in order to frighten people? And so I'm interested if in these comments about the subject, we also can talk about our sources of news and how we do our own critical thinking.
Yes. Well, you know, after 20 years of and more of researching this, there are just so many sources of their actual statements of their intent to depopulate the planet. And from their point of view, you might say, you know, with the amount of special resources that we're using up, that they have a certain logic to want to get rid of 6.5 billion of us. Well, there's a lot of evidence for that, as you both know, and you are so both so brave to put that in the Thrive movie, that they really are intent on culling the population. And I think that's really the issue behind the vaccine dilemma that we find ourselves in here, and the other issues that were, like geoengineering is very serious, and that you know, what about addressing what you all know, because you're much more informed, I feel, than I am about, you know, what this is so serious, and so, and people mainly just shut down. They don't want to hear about it. And you're so both clear and calm and logical and very succinct and present things so well. I just, you know, I bow to you both completely.
Well, thank you for your support, Spiri. And, you know, when I was talking earlier about seeing through the lens of the global domination agenda, think of the whole vaccine issue. To whatever degree it's not well-informed and voluntary, look how effective it is at dumbing down and confusing people, making them afraid, making them sick, and fighting against each other. So there is apparently a very useful agenda behind whatever health concerns are genuine, that serves this agenda to control us. So we just try to spread the awareness to ask these questions and then ultimately end up making your own free choice, you know, after you've considered the relevant information. Okay, so why don't we move on to someone else? Thanks for your inputs, Barry.
Yeah, so welcome. Thank you.
Okay, I'm moving on to a different, it was about net neutrality, and I think that it's really important. That is one that really takes critical thinking. And Foster, I think it'd be helpful if you describe it, because we get stuff all the time saying, will you please post about this and ask people to sign up for, you know, this new way to help secure net neutrality. And when we dig deeper into it, we understand that it actually just gives more power to the government. Can you describe some of your process around the net neutrality one and information that you have there?
Sure. This one obviously is really hot right now because the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, which is a government-appointed agency, just voted 3-2 to maintain what they call net neutrality. And what that basically means is that the private corporations, the internet service providers and so forth, are not allowed to either slow down information moving on the internet or to speed it up, you know, according to what people are willing to pay. And this is a really good example for us to unpack, because it's very subtle and very complex. So it really invites us to find what are the principles that we care about to support various decisions. And it really sounds good. Nobody wants their internet slowed down. So it's like, yeah, net neutrality. We don't want to have, you know, some big nasty corporation take over our internet speed or something like that. So it sounds great on the surface. So this vote took place. There was a lot of citizen activism. 4 million contacts went to Congress. Google and Amazon have been pretty silent on it recently. Reddit and Tumblr have been very active in favor of the net neutrality. This has been mostly democratically inspired or Democrat-inspired, but the Republicans, for the most part, seems to be going along with it as well. On the one hand, I think that they know it's not popular to be against something that is perceived as freedom of the internet. And on the other hand, as we've seen in many other cases, both parties at the top really are in favor of expanding the powers of government. And that's where this gets tricky. Because in the short term, great, there's going to be no immediate change. And Congress still has to vote on this, and this is no sure thing there. But if, in fact, the FCC ruling stands, in the short term, that can be great because there won't be any immediate changes. But in the process, what we need to realize is that we are endorsing the government controlling the internet. And do we, in fact, want that? And if you look to see the main supporters, I mean, I have a lot of respect for a guy named Robert McChesney from the Free Press organization. He's a professor, a diligent researcher on information. I know he really wants people to have access to information and their speed on the internet and all of that kind of thing. But once again, if you ask who's benefiting and follow the money, Free Press is funded primarily by George Soros, who is a real promoter of the socialist agenda. And this whole thing goes back to the Communications Act of 1933, where something like this, obviously there wasn't internet back then, but it was about the government regulating to make sure that there was freedom of communication. And it was a disaster. It resulted in a whole bunch of government-backed monopolies that then needed to be broken up. And So another principle to consider is private property. How much of your freedom, how much of your property do you want the government to be in charge of? If you're some guy who, you know, 10 years ago did a successful internet startup in Silicon Valley and you've built this big company that's providing this great service and everything, how much do you want to turn over the power of what you can and can't do with your company to the internet? I mean, to the government. Another good example to look at is when cell phones first came out. Imagine if the government had said, you know, we really want to make sure that everybody has access to cell phones. So we're going to use your tax money. We're going to control the quality of cell phones, and we're going to make sure everybody has one. Well, you know, now you'd be in a total government-controlled a cell phone situation. And what happened instead was multiple companies servers developed. The quality and the ubiquity of the cell phones spread with unbelievable rapidity all over the world. And so now we've got quality, we've got a great degree of freedom. And all of that happened through personal incentive and honest competition, rather than the government promising that they were going to take care of our freedoms once again while expanding their power over our freedoms of free commerce. So now let's say just a couple more points, and I'll open this up. The FCC is, of course, a U.S. Agency. So that means that it would have authority over one country out of 196. And when you do a web search, it goes all over the planet. So what is the FCC doing thinking that they're going to take over control and actually police the entire internet? You know, what they're going to do is you know, try and prosecute people in the United States. But how successful are they going to be at that? In China, they have 100,000 employees full-time just working on the bureaucracy to censor the internet. So imagine how this thing would blow up when they're trying to regulate, you know, the speed now, but very quickly it would move. It always does. It would move into regulating the content of the internet. So there's a guy named Gary North wrote an article about this. And he had a very interesting statement. First of all, he was suggesting, and I think he's right, that the FCC is really moving in to not only control content, but to control pricing. Because when you can control pricing, it's like the Rothschilds thing about, you know, controlling currency, then you can control the people. When you control pricing, you've centralized control. You've gotten rid of the free market and voluntary exchange. So Gary North, his main point is that this thing is so worldwide, there's so many brilliant people working on it, that even if the FCC and the government try to use what might be their new power to shut this thing down, they're not going to be able to. The way he put it was the information gatekeepers are finished. They stand at the gate telling us that we must meet their standards to get through. Meanwhile, the walls are all down. So to me, it's a very compelling sort of test case for what are the principles, not just what are our desires, well, you know, what's the most popular opinion in your neighborhood or your political party, but what are the principles by which things like this get decided? So with that, I'll keep my peace and open it up here.
Yeah, the simple version that I apply that also that I think is useful is how so often it's the thing that we want that's offered first. Like you said, like, oh, they'll help make something happen that they can tell most people are in favor of. And then what's not recognized is that you're giving them authority. So even though in this first instance it looks like the government's going to do what you want, I mean, that's the argument I use with people who believe in this herd immunity and think that vaccines are necessary and the government should be able to do it. I just say, well, let's think of something that you're not for. And are you for the government having mandatory right to do that to you and your family? And then it's sort of like, oh, I see. Because often the way it comes in is first with something that we want. So that's part of the critical thinking. And I think given that that's sort of the main topic of the day, it's how do we just always have this lens on to think if more of this were done in other ways, is that going to be a good idea? And what part of our own freedom are we giving up with this notion that someone else has authority over us? That's still the critical bottom line. Okay, so we have various people asking very interesting things here. Some are on different events. Sky, do you want to come in on this net neutrality thing? Sky St. Martha had a quick question here for you. Maybe you can make your video. Can you show your
video? Apparently the video is not going to work. I wanted to know where I can find a copy of the actual bill that was passed so I can read it myself. I can't seem to find that anywhere. Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you. And
that's a great question, and I don't have the answer to that. I haven't read it myself, and I invite anyone who's on the call who's interested in that, see if you can find it, and if you find a link, drop it in the chat during the call.
Yeah, thank you. Also, Raj and Randall. Okay, let's see, Raj. There was one. Oh, maybe I'm mistaken there. Randall. Randall Rabideau. And again, I think the answer, Foster, we need to focus on is how do we get the news about these? What is our opinion? But the other is how do we form that opinion and what are we reading to figure it out? Okay. Is it Randall or Randy? Randy.
It's Randy.
Okay. Randy. Can you find the little green icon next to your name of a camera?
My question was totally unrelated to this. Is that okay?
Go for it.
Okay. I was wondering if anybody has any information regarding the apparent ET crash north of Winnipeg in Manitoba that happened, I believe, the 18th of February. And some say that this has been compared to the Roswell 1947. Military came in very, very quickly. They took over. And apparently one person who took a picture was taken into custody. I'm just wondering, and now I notice that there's very little information. Just wondering if anybody has anything on this.
I don't have much more than you do. It's one I've been following with great interest. I was just going to say, someone who has written a bit about it recently is David Wilcock. And there are some various YouTube videos. There's no actual footage of the wreck itself, because I think you're correct in what you're saying, that the military moved in very rapidly, surrounded the whole area, went house to house doing what they were calling interviews, which was really telling people not to come out of their house. They're saying it's so cold you need to stay in your house. You don't come out and take pictures of a crashed UFO in the lake. Yeah, this is up in Manitoba, Canada. And they have cordoned off the area. They forbid anyone to talk about it up there. I don't have absolute verification that the whole thing is real, but I don't have any good reason to believe that it's not. And one of the things that Wilcock talks about, and this is all from he's got some quite high-level government and intelligence agencies contacts who have been telling him for some time that there are major ET wars going on literally right over our heads. And they have a lot to do with what kind of influence different species will have on this planet, because some of them are well-intended in the sense of having our best interests in mind, and some of them aren't. And so they are contending with one another for whatever reasons. And supposedly that crash craft, as well as several others that have come down in other areas around the world and have been just, the media has just called them meteorites or something like that, but a number of bright lights that have appeared falling in the sky down to Earth his contacts are saying that these are also craft which have been shot down. So I don't have any more information than that. Every source that I have, it seems to be indicating that this is a very a time of intense activity in global financial markets, in global politics, and in the ET human interactions, and also in the ET interactions. And I think that this is part of it, but it's purely speculation based on, you know, so far for me.
Yeah.
If you find out more, let us know.
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that is an interesting part of how we wade through this also is we actually do all that we can to separate facts from speculation. So when Foster was saying, like, what happened, it's actually really hard sometimes because the way that we're presented with the notion is with a slant on it. So you get the fact mixed with an interpretation. And how to tease that out and try to go, first of all, just what happened? What's the actual evidence and fact that we can wrap around? And then what are the various speculations? And then what motivates those different speculations? And to actually take the time to tease out these different issues is a really important and kind of the slower part of it. And often when Foster and I will first hear about something and, you know, be like, well, what do you think? And it's like, I don't know yet. I really don't know. I'm just first trying to figure out what actually is happening. And then this thing about following the money is, to me, again, the single most valuable way to figure out what is the incentive for somebody to have me believe whatever it is that they're trying to have me believe. So to me, any of the unpacking that you can do, and that happens best, in my opinion, by having information come from different perspectives, because then you can see what's the perspective and what's the fact. Which part of the fact just holds up that there really seems to have been a crash, or that there really is something like that going on. So wading through and figuring out the facts is a really valuable part of the critical thinking process.
I would love to hear more from other people about what you think about net neutrality, and don't think that you need to agree with us. Everybody's opinion is of great value. And if you've already asked your question, lower your hand digitally, and if you want to respond about net neutrality, raise your hand.
Okay, so there's James Marcus has his hand up.
Am I good to go?
Yeah, could you just click on the icon that has the camera, because it makes it more fun when people can see each other.
Is it that? Oh, okay. Let's see. Next to me, where is it here?
Next to your name, there should be a little green camera, video camera icon.
Yeah, just, I've been dealing with, here we go. No, I can't find even my name now. You know, it's like this has been ridiculous.
Well, we got your voice.
Okay. Oh, here, right there. How about that?
Haven't come through yet.
Okay.
You're coming! Yay!
Great.
Okay.
So, of all the topics we've been discussing, perhaps net neutrality, I feel, is it's important so that we can keep talking to each other, for God's sake, right?
Yes.
This direct connection is becoming paramount because, as you've been saying, the amount of misinformation and disinformation is unbelievable, right? I find most of the other topics to be all part of the same topic, right? We've got an octopus here with a lot of arms, and no matter which one we address, the other arms are going to continue to wiggle. They're even willing to give up a few arms, right? So when we focus on one or the other, I feel like we're missing the heart of the beast. right? And whether we wind up in opposition or having opinions about which one is more important, they're all important. And there's a lot of misinformation about a lot of it. But the essence still comes through, which is we're in a world of shit. Environmentally, I mean, I'd love to have direct experience with the ET thing, for instance. I haven't, and I don't, but I don't see the relevance in relation to the fact that our world is being attacked monumentally in a dozen ways. Our children, ourselves, our environment, everything. They're out about annihilation now. ETs somehow don't enter the picture for me in the relevance scale. And a lot of the other things don't when I'm under attack like I feel we are. Oh, there's a planet in many ways, GMOs, aerial spraying, vaccines, you name it. You know, anyone you can look at, but it doesn't get after the heart, which is coming from a very small core of folks. And I'm asking myself, so how do we get after that? Without trying, you know, we go one by one, there'll be endless more attacks on us. And they're only too happy to actually help us take one apart of their own things. You know, the modus operandi of deception here goes many levels. And I love the way they're able to co-opt our own attempts to defeat them. They'll help us. So then they get all the information about everybody who's doing everything and all of that, right?
I think,
what do we do? How do we take a different aim at the core?
Well,
there isn't much time. I asked that, by the way, I asked that seriously and with intention and emotion because I don't feel we have a whole lot of time left. This isn't political anymore. You know,
I agree.
Environment has a limited amount of sustainability, and wow, it's close. And fortunately, I live in Maui where we have a chance of surviving, but I'm concerned for the entirety of the planet. So now,
for the GMOs and the pesticides and the chemtrails, right?
I mean, all of it.
I think that the thing about getting to the heart of the matter, you know, when we waded through, you know, a decade of research to cull what became Thrive, what we put in there was what we thought of as what's the minimum sufficient understanding that people need to have in order to get at the heart of the matter. And in my view, you know, most of what gets played out through the economy. Because when you can keep people hungry and in need and desperate, then you can get them to do almost anything. That's just the way it goes. And so we focused on having people understand the economy. And one of the things I want to get to and that I see David Spinelli and others have questions about is the economy and what's happening. But one of the things that I also think is that the other part of it is both fear and the other part of it is a sense of possibility. And for a long time, I thought the ET thing was irrelevant also. I just thought, you know, look, we have got to master what's going on this planet and whatever else. It's like, we'll get to that after we do this. But I think that the fact is that the sense of possibility that emerges for people when they realize that the kind of travel that's necessary for ETs to be here is in fact happening means that, it's evidence-based, that when you get that, you get that all this stuff about energy that we're fighting over and distracted by. So the other part of it I want to say is I think that honoring different people's passions is really, really important because even though, you know, some of us are oriented toward one, and clearly there are things that are going to have more impact than others, there are still ways, some people are really at intervening at an immediate needs level. They want to take care of someone who's hungry right now. There are others who are going to intervene at the level of the systems that are failing to feed people, and still others that get at that whole consciousness shift of what it is to have people starving. But I know I agree with you that there are certain issues that are certainly more leveraged than certain actions that are more leveraged. And the thing that we're doing next on March 14th about this administrative process to hold corporations and governments, which we'll find out are corporations, accountable, the individuals there, is really a significant leap forward in actually getting some action on the ground toward what we need to have happen. But anyway, I just wanted to add that part. Foster, do you want to respond also?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic question that you're asking. And this whole notion of getting to the heart of the matter is absolutely critical because, you know, we can waste a lot of time, as exactly. Thoreau said, you know, hacking at the branches without getting to the root. And for me, the two biggest sort of obstacles are money and force. And currently, the government in this country and in other countries around the world, I know people are listening from other countries as well, but it's true in each country, the government has a monopoly on money and it has a monopoly on military power. But how did they get that? By what authority did they claim that monopoly? And to me, that's what ultimately goes to the root of it, is the only way that a few people who are outnumbered more than a million to one by the rest of us, the only way they keep their power in the long run is as long as we believe that they should have that power, as long as there's enough people who keep giving them that power on a daily basis, rather than standing up and saying, no, wait a minute, you can't tell me whether I have to get vaccinated. You can't take my money and go do these awful things with it. You can't take my children and send them off to, you know, wars of imperialist aggression and so forth. So for me, the heart of the matter is the very question of authority itself. And that was really the punchline of the Thrive movie, that the one thing that we have found that everyone that we've ever talked to agrees to, and it's not easy to find something that everybody agrees to, is that they don't want to be violated against their will. So that translates into a principle, the non-aggression principle, the non-initiation of force, where you can't hurt me and or take my stuff, and I can't hurt you and take your stuff. And that can translate very easily into protective laws, not coercive laws, not aggressive laws, going out and telling people who they can marry and what they can smoke and what they can eat and all that kind of stuff, but literally just laws that protect individual rights and private property. To me, enough people waking up to the fact that no one on planet Earth should have any right that everyone doesn't have is the key to the whole thing, because then the people who are doing the GMOs and the chemtrails and the pesticides and the vaccines and so forth, then they become personally liable, interimly, and financially liable for doing that harm. They can't hide behind the government. They can't hide behind the corporation. And that's what this event we're going to be doing in 2 weeks is about, because there are people in various countries around the world who have found this key. They have been trying it out in the courts, and it's working.
Can I say a few things?
Yeah.
Okay. Firstly, about the ETs, which I greatly appreciate their potential. They're here. They've chosen apparently not to intervene for reasons and do something about all this for us or with us for reasons that I don't understand, but I have to honor. So therefore, they again leave the picture, not by my choice, but by their choice, apparently. If they got here, they could do something, okay? I'm inferring that technologically, right? But they're choosing not to or whatever. Okay, that thing. Now, as far as legal recourse, I do feel that the rule of law is dead, and that our sense of fair play and wanting to go to that arena, it has been sufficiently co-opted now that it may or may not play out in any sense of favor, which it was made to be, right? Basically, they make the laws for us, not for themselves, and they control the judges and all this sort of thing. We can waste a lot of time, therefore, playing the game in their court, only to either be stymied forever or maybe win one or two. They'll throw the dog a bone. We don't have the time. The environment, I say, doesn't. That whole recourse is a very lengthy and honorable one. but I don't know that it hasn't been completely co-opted at this point, along with the information that it takes to go to sane places with so-called fats. Holy smokes, hard to come by.
Just so you're clear, the thing that we're talking about is not a legal process. It actually is a way that cuts right through it for precisely the reasons that you're saying, and we will be discussing it next week, but it's not in any way based on a rule of law. It's, in fact, defending that.
Wait a minute. I got one of those who's been on the side just waiting to get on camera.
All right. Everybody show their cats.
Thank you very much. I hope we go further in the whole discussion and get through to this independent freedom that we need to just say no. Say no. And by the way, that's what I like about Maui. There's 100 monkeys here who are saying no. And that to me has a very interesting potential.
Thank you.
Let me go one step further with you, James, because Maui is a fishbowl for the entire world right now.
Yes,
you know, what
is
the Shaka movement did to ban GMOs is a very powerful statement. And within 2 days, all of a sudden, the citizens of Maui are up against, you know, billions of dollars of funding for Monsanto in court. So I know what you're saying about the legal system, you know, has been bought and paid for many times over. What we're talking about is something that actually gets outside of that, because even the environmental movement, to a great extent, we feel, has been co-opted by the bankers trying to get Agenda 21 and the carbon tax and all of that under the guise of environmentalism. They're trying to create the one world government, one world tax, all that kind of stuff. What we're going to be talking about next week is a way that actually cuts through all of that and then holds the individuals behind the corporations, behind the banks, behind the governments, behind the spray companies and so forth, holds them each vastly liable for any harm that they're doing financially and legally.
Well, let me just say that the brand new Maui Police Department has been built on the corner of the road to Monsanto's HQ.
Yeah.
Wow. They're ready.
Yeah.
They're expecting whatever. I don't know. But, you know, they realize, and they've co-opted, brilliantly co-opted, oh, please, you have a movement, let me help you. Not only that, I'll loan you the money.
Right.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, James. Very helpful.
Thank you. Let's go for, let's see, I was looking at David Finelli. David, can you come up and then find the camera icon next to you?
Congratulations on getting through. I know you've been struggling with some of this WebEx technology on your computer. I appreciate your perseverance. Are you there? David, speak to us if you can, so we can know if you at least have audio.
Hello.
There we are.
The echoey. Let's see.
Can you coach David on how to get rid of the echo?
Best way to do that is to actually have a headset so it's not being fed back through the computer. Or he could possibly use his phone to call in. I see his audio is transmitting, but we're not actually getting it through the system. There he is.
Try again, David.
Is this me, Foster? Are you talking to me?
Exactly. Without a headset, David, the reverberations are too much to be able to
just
hear.
Just either earbuds or a headset gets rid of the feedback from the speakers. Do you have any earbuds, David, that you could put in? I think we're going to need to wait until you find those or the next time, because the echo is so bad we can't understand you.
I'm going to read David's question.
Okay, good.
If I can get there again. Sorry. Joe or Rob, anybody who can find it.
I was just going to say to David as well, once he gets his audio thing fixed, if he wants to raise his hand, we can bring him back in. But I've muted him and put him back down.
Okay, we'll do it that way then. Then let's see, David. Well, one of the things has to do, Foster, there's a lot about the whole financial situation, and it seems to me it would be valuable to talk for a minute about how we wade through to figure out our assessment of the global economy and what's going on, and the whole notion of this, you know, value-based banks that are set up, a whole new rating service, what all that amounts to. I know we were looking the other day at a statement by Christine Lagarde. I spent 20 minutes on one paragraph, literally. I'm like, this is so intent on being confusing, right? So that my reaction is supposed to be, wow, I'm sure glad there are some experts who understand the economy, because I can't possibly figure out what they're talking about. And that is exactly the reaction we need not to have. This needs to make sense, and we need to be responsible for the currency that we're currencies that we're using to interact with each other. But anyway, why not? There are enough coming in about the economy and what's going on and how we wade through that. You want to say something while David gets his stuff going?
Sure, I know that's a big area of interest for David. So David, I hope you get through. Yeah, we've done several events previously on this, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on it today. But, you know, going once again to the heart of the matter, the, for 400 years, there has been a growing problem on the planet, which is a few people get to make up money out of nothing, and then they get to take other people's money and reloan it out times 10, the fractional reserve banking, and that obviously I'm talking about fiat money, and then they get to charge interest in addition that doesn't even exist in the economy on that loan. So that can only go on for so long before it leads to complete chaos and collapse, and that's what we're on the verge of. And I don't think this is news to anybody on this call, but the key thing, once again, is to look at it through the lens of, okay, well, who's that serving? Who's benefiting from that? Obviously, as the world is going broke, the 0.00001% of elite bankers is sucking up all the wealth. And it's not because they're smarter. It's because they own this scheme. So then the question, once again, is by what authority do they do that to us? They take our money through taxation, and then when we try to do a deal or put money in the bank, they screw us every way possible. So for me, the question thread that has the power is, where did they get the authority to do that? And this goes right back to the same thing of the bankers have been secretly in cahoots with the politicians for centuries now, where the politicians say, okay, you give me the money that I need so that I don't have to actually get people to agree to pay for a war, or if they don't like my programs or my reducing certain things in the budget, they're going to vote me out. So you keep giving me this fake money, and I'll allow you to keep the power to make the fake money. And so then we'll go into, you know, the government and the corporations, including the banks, go into cooperation with each other, and that's what Mussolini called fascism. And so really, whether it's on the left or the right, if it goes on long enough, it becomes fascism, and that's where we are. So the philosophically, we need to challenge it by showing that the emperor actually has no clothes. They've got a lot of guns, but they actually don't have any legitimate authority. So without that legitimate authority, the power of the Federal Reserve, the power of the nationalist governments and so forth goes away. Now, it's not going to go away overnight. Obviously, this is going to take some time, but it's the basis on which it's going to go away. And then secondly, okay, what do we do in the meantime? But until we're waiting for this philosophical utopia, what do we do in the meantime? And that's why we've tried to spell out this three-stage strategy where we're really trying to take care of people, to take care of those most disadvantaged by this vast corrupt system, while we've still got any involuntary taxation, instead of sending the vast majority of that money to the military and to the Federal Reserve, you get rid of the Federal Reserve and cut the military budget in half. It would be a genuine protective budget then, and that money will give you plenty of money to not only correct the social, environmental and economic woes in this country, but enough to, as the Earth Policy Institute has demonstrated with numerous budgets, that the money saved just from that alone, which would be about $1.3 trillion a year, would easily solve those problems worldwide. So that's the transition. And then, we've had this prayer inside ourselves ever since Thrive came out, that that hopefully there would be some sort of powers in the world, some people with enough capability to actually counterbalance the banking cabal, which has taken us to the brink of destruction. And as we've reported several times before, it turns out that it seems like there are vast gold troves and new veins of gold and so forth, particularly in Asia, in China, Japan, the Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, and there are ancient families who have been the stewards of this gold. And what we've been told, and we've been in direct and secondhand contact with many representatives from these families, and we're told that their foundation is spiritual, that they're not just about greed and control, they actually have been playing this chess game of waiting until they were in a position with sufficient military power, with sufficient financial power, with sufficient people power and influence and collaborators around the world to actually make the move and bring these resources out for the betterment of mankind, and that now is in fact that time. And it seems to be happening big time. And if you've been watching the BRICS alliance, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and now more than 100 countries have joined that alliance, and basically they're building all the alternatives to the Western banking cabal regime. So they've got new gold exchanges, they're building a new internet, they have a new rating service, and on and on. They're having to find ways, even around the SWIFT money transfer system, so that they can bring this wealth out safely without it being stolen by the banking cabal, which has happened numerous times in the past. And if the United States, the U.S. Treasury, and the government doesn't go along with this, unfortunately, this country will be isolated. The currency will probably go through severe collapse, and we'll have to get the lesson the hard way. What we're really hoping for, and we've done some previous blogs laying out, five possible scenarios, is that the U.S. Treasury is willing to go along, that the banking cabal is willing to become a participant, a partner with the rest of the world in an asset-backed, much more transparent global money system. And that would be able to lead to the prosperity that a true free market in currencies can create. Now, what we're being told is that there is tremendous activity on that as we speak, and that may be very close. We can't make any promises in terms of timing or divulge the players involved there, but we're more encouraged than ever. And what we need to be very careful of at the same time is that we don't get fooled into some fake, divide and conquer again, where it seems like we're in this puppet show where the BRICS countries are against the Western banking cabal, and now all of a sudden Russia and China are the good guys, and so we all buy into a global cashless currency where we have, a new authoritarian regime, and this time it's in the hands of China, or it's in the hand of the BRICS countries, rather than actually creating a global free market in currencies, in communications, in commerce and so forth, that could actually take really serious steps in terms of setting us all free. Kimberly, it looks like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I think it's really like there's so much disinformation and misinformation and marginalizing of various issues that just to even come across, you know, the notion that something like this could be real took a lot of unpacking of things. And I know when I listen to the mainstream news, like just the other day I was seeing something about Russia causes more tension around, you know, something, and it was like, what is the frame on this? You know, here we are, like, I think it'd be useful, Kwasha, if you want to do a brief lowdown on what you think is happening with in Ukraine and Russia and what's really transpiring here, because when you understand that the most of the world is no longer going along with the U.S. dollar being able to reign here, and the significance of that, that of course we're going to make it look, the mainstream news is going to make it look like the countries who are doing that are doing something wrong, right? When in fact they're calling a spade and they're going about no longer going for this. And I think there's a revolution happening right now. There's a global revolution going on that we're not hearing about on the mainstream news. And that revolution has to do with this whole BRICS alliance making these moves. That's most of the world's population, right, is joining together now to go for an asset-backed currency and no longer doing their deals in with the dollar. And Russia, who decided to have this alternative to the SWIFT system, which is how the big money moves around, they were going to have that done in May, and they ended up having it done 2 weeks ago. Like, stuff's moving here, and big things are happening, and a big part of understanding and interpreting the mainstream news is knowing about this other stuff going on so that you can be looking through the lens. What might they be doing? And I always look at it through the lens of money. How is this affecting the global economy? Because that's what it's all about, whether it's the interface of GMOs and obesity and all the rest, you know, going back to the pharmaceuticals. Anyway, so I just wanted to say, I think that how we get at the information, how easy it is to seem crazy when you even start to go down these roads, but it requires that you go, wait a minute, I know there's something else going on. So here's another one. I wanted to mention that geoengineering was the other poll topic that we were going to get into, and that's a perfect example of one that really takes sleuthing out the misinformation and disinformation from what we can see and know is going on.
Well, let's take just a minute and look at, you know, following on the last question about international finance and so forth, let's just look very briefly at the type of things that are going on in Iraq and Syria and Ukraine to see how that kind of all fits together. And then we can touch on the geoengineering before we have to close. So one of the things that we observe is that the mainstream media likes to have a very rapid news cycle. So they get you excited about something, afraid about something, it lasts, you know, a few days or maybe a week, and then it's gone and you've got the new thing that you're supposed to be afraid of. And it's just really important to follow more credible, enduring sources of information and then step back and see how does all this fit together. So if we look at what's going on in Iraq, I won't take the time to lay out a lot of evidence, but it's really clear, I think, to anyone who's really done their homework that this ISIS / ISIL force is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda, which was originally created by the CIA. And ISIS has been, there's a bunch of evidence recently. In fact, the Iraqi army just shot down two UK planes that ended up, they were carrying weapons for ISIS. And the U.S. has been caught numerous times either delivering or leaving weapons in certain places for the ISIS forces. So it seems to be a classic sort of bait and switch thing where, if going back to our original discussion, if the powers that be want to keep disrupting the Middle East so that they can continue to fulfill their agenda, that, you know, General Wesley Clark, in a video that you've probably seen, laid out the information that he got directly from the Pentagon, that that there were seven countries that the Pentagon was planning on taking down. And this was within a couple of days of 9/11. And so they're in the process of doing that, and Syria and Iran are the ones that are left. So look and see where the focus is. John Kerry just announced that he wants to get now, Obama wants to get boots on the ground in Iraq and Syria. They've been needing to find some excuse to go into Syria ever since the Congress, you know, hopefully representing the American people, refused to do that a while ago. So now with ISIS, it looks like they can, you know, try to create this excuse where they can go in and just, you know, fight the rebel forces and so forth, and just confuse people enough that they get the authorization to go into Syria and then take over that government the same way they have in so many others in the Middle East. And then you look at the Ukraine. I was reading an article the other day that was pointing out that the U.S. is supporting Kiev's war against what they call the rebels and terrorists, while at the same time arming and financing the Syria's Sunni rebels, whom the government in Damascus, the Assad regime, calls rebels and terrorists. So it's understandable if this is getting very confusing for people. But this is where, if we back up and see, okay, what they're trying to do is get rid of any economies that aren't a part of the Rothschild central banking system, that they want to get rid of any so-called rogue nations having the ability to defend themselves through nuclear weapons. They want to go into these countries like they did in Iraq and take whatever gold they have. That didn't get publicized in mainstream, but that's the first thing they did, besides kind of destroying the culture and the infrastructure, was stole their gold. And so if that's the lens that we're looking through, you can see how critical it is that we wake up to not going along with this, that we question their authority, and that we support groups like the Chinese elders if they're in fact looking to help liberate people worldwide rather than to actually be the next regime to take over. So I wish we had time to discuss all of that. And a similar thing in Greece, that's a whole nother story, but and we can cover that later if we have time. But let's just take a moment and talk about geoengineering, because that was the most popular question in the poll. As many of you probably know, and in fact, I see that Bruce Tanner's on the call, and he's the head of the Thrive Santa Cruz meetup, part of the International Solutions Group. And in fact, he's started a group here in Santa Cruz that is taking on the whole geoengineering and chemtrail issue. In fact, Bruce and Kimberly and I did an event a few months ago where we laid out the whole story as far as we could see what was going on. It was included a video from Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.com. And then we talked very much about the solutions, about what we can do using the 12 sector approach that we used to stop the moth spray fiasco here in Northern California back in 2007. But you know, in a nutshell, for any of you who aren't familiar with it, it's the second most dangerous thing going on the planet after nuclear radiation and nuclear weapons, because it is now worldwide. And whether people know about it or not, we're all having to breathe this stuff. It's getting into the soil, it's getting into the trees and plants, and there's arsenic and barium and aluminum and live bacteria, all sorts of nasty substances are being put in these chemtrails. And there's over 90 patents going back 15 years showing that companies have developed the capability of doing that. There's lots of articles and evidence that they have been doing it. And now the government is still pretending not to do it, but going for authorization to do it. And one of the main initiatives that we're hoping to be doing in the next phase of Thrive and Our Whole Solutions Hub is a global webinar educating people about this and what they can do about it so that we can have the funding to hire the investigators to really get the solid information like we did with the moth spray on who's funding this, what's the hidden agenda, and then challenge their authority, hold them personally liable for all the harm that they're doing now and potentially in the future, and then call that out worldwide, a simultaneous world movement to stop the violations of individuals and ecosystems that's going on through HARP, through chemtrails, and all sorts of other geoengineering mechanisms. So if anybody else has any comments on that or questions, just raise your hand.
And then, let's see, I think, I don't see a hand up. Oh, we have Ray has a hand up on that, and then Raj has something to say on something else. So, Ray, Mummy,
can you hear me? Got your audio?
Yeah, can you click on your video?
One second.
Okay.
Okay, Ray, stay set. We'll hear if your audio is coming through.
Can you see me?
We can hear you. That's a good step, and it looks like we're about to see you.
Okay. And you can hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I have a couple of comments on many different things that we've discussed today, and I missed the first part of the audio. I wasn't connected. I wanted to make sure that everyone, if you hadn't heard about the movie Bought that just came out through Natural News, I don't know if you guys mentioned it or not. I apologize if you already have.
We did.
Good, because that's a great thing that we can spread on the internet to
agreed.
Help people to awaken to the corruption of the vaccines and so on and so forth and GMOs. I'm in St. Louis, so I'm in the heart of the Monsanto BS. And God, I have comments on every different part of the conversation that we've had tonight. So let me kind of take them in step. When we're talking about net neutrality, I wanted to say, isn't this the same agenda that came up approximately a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we had the big boycott on the internet regarding trying to limit the internet on what was going to be out there? I think maybe it was Amazon or some huge corporations got involved and said no, and it stopped the government from taking that next step.
I think it was related but different. I think that was the whole CISPA endeavor that Aaron Schwartz was really fighting against. So it was similar in the sense that it was about property rights on the internet and internet speeds and so forth. But to my mind, it wasn't exactly the same.
Okay. Well, thank you. I wanted to say something else about the internet. I had friends of mine who have traveled abroad and have lived abroad, and they had mentioned to me that in Asian countries, specifically China, they were getting the internet at a fraction of the cost that we were getting it, and the speed was like hundreds of times faster than we are getting our internet here in the U.S. I'm not sure if that's factual or not. However, I've heard it from two different folks that were living abroad. They said it was amazing on the difference on the internet. So we know it's been controlled at this point on the speed and everything else that goes on with our internet. So.
Yeah. And it's an interesting one because, you know, different people have different internet services with different speeds. People have different computers with different speeds. And I think it's one of these cases where we really need to think deeper than the first level, because the notion that someone has a faster internet speed than you do sounds awful, particularly if you have to pay for it. But then on the other hand, if somebody has a faster car or Germany has an Autobahn with no speed limit, you know, that's more of the free market. And one of the things that people forget is in the free market, the quality goes up so fast that you might end up having double the speed in a year that you've got right now, but it's still not as fast as someone else. So neither approach is going to affect a perfect solution to all of this, but I've never been encouraged by the ability of government control to create a secure and healthy long-term solution to any problem, whether it's energy, education, health, or the internet.
I totally agree. Since we really don't have a government, we have a corporation that runs the U.S. anyway, as we all know. That happened back in 1867, I think it was.
Yeah, 1871. I wish everybody knew that. I don't know if you were on earlier, Ray, when we said our event in 2 weeks, our Thrive Together event, is going to be on tracing the timeline and the current distinctions and solutions power that knowing that gives us. So that's exactly the event we're going to be doing 2 weeks from today.
Awesome. I'll be there. I lost the audio in the first 15 minutes of the event, and I was
yeah. Okay.
Another item that we talked about was the with the financial system and the issues with that, and we have so many people that are dumbed down. Two things I'd like to say. Number one is, yes, we need to make a change. The best way we can make a change, waiting for all these great things that we hope are coming through with the white hats and all these folks that are with the whole Indonesia with the goal and the whole Kennedy thing, all that research that we've all seen, that I've seen. We need to take the money that we spend while we're still in the matrix and spend it the right way to leave a message to the corporations. Corporations react very quickly when you don't buy their products. They change and distribute and make the products that we want. So, you know, the whole GMO thing with Monsanto and all that, I have a Puerto Rico greenhouse, and we grow tomatoes in the middle of winter here in St. Louis, and it's turning heads big time because I decided I'm not going to work for money anymore. I am going to make a difference in the world. So I
thank you
for money, and I grow tomatoes and culinary herbs, and people are going crazy over it because we have a great summertime tomato that's available right now. We're trying to make a difference, and I just wish people would realize that if we all just spent the money that we spend on the products to make a difference, it would help to make that change.
Right.
Ray, I think it's a fabulous point, because I totally agree. We can't depend on the Asian elders to save our ass here. We can't wait for the ETs to come down and rescue us. All that'll be great if it happens. But meanwhile, we actually need to take complete responsibility ourselves. And the life choice that you've made is a really inspiring role model of that. And it only took 6% of the American male adult population to create the Revolutionary War. And in shareholder initiatives like you're talking about, we've interviewed some people for Thrive who are very well versed in that, and they said that at shareholder meetings, if there's an initiative that gets 6% of the shareholders who are there for the annual meeting, that's when they say they realize, okay, that's a tipping point. There's a lot more out there like them, and so they will actually change course. So I think it's a very powerful point that you make. So thanks for that, Ray. Yeah, we're going to need to move on and need to start closing this up, and Kimberly's got an offering for us.
Well, yeah, I want to say, first of all, that I think the event on March 14th is one of the most exciting things that's come our way in a long time, and it really is unpacking this incorporation of America and of most Commonwealth countries, but most importantly, it is really significant in terms of our leverage in being able to achieve some quantum leaps in our capacity to go up against, actually to just go through the power of Monsanto and other corporations like this and achieve some true solutions. So I encourage you to tune in and participate in that with us and with Cal Washington, who's going to be our guest. And the other thing that I wanted to say about all this is that, you know, as we wade through all of the news and try to figure out what's really going on, and there's so much that is seriously wrong, at the same time that there, you know, for every problem, I am so aware that there are people working on the solutions everywhere, all over the place. And I know I've said before that Foster and I are probably in a unique position to be as encouraged as we are, but it's because we're in touch with so many people who are doing so many brilliant things and who are committed to something different. And toward that, I want to talk for a minute about the power of our thoughts and what it is that we're visioning here. Because I know about 12 years ago, Foster and I were in a think tank gathering together, and Teresa Collins, one of our colleagues and friends at the time, led us on a visualization of a thriving world. A really detailed visualization where, you know, of course we were there gathered together talking about the problems that were going on, but what we did in that moment, in that half hour, was to actually really look at what it would look like in a thriving world. And we decided when we put together the website for Thrive that in every sector we would begin each sector, which of course talks about the very serious challenges that we're facing with the environment and the economy and all the rest. But at the beginning, you'll see there's a vision of what this sector would look like if in a thriving state. And I think it's a really significant part of the, you know, I mean, if you're in the San Francisco Bay and you're setting out to sail to Hawaii, you better know where Hawaii is or you're going to get lost at sea. And I think that's true as we wade through all of the problems here, that it's really worthwhile to take a moment to actually envision what this is going to look like when it's different. Because, first of all, thoughts matter. Form follows energy, and the energy of our thoughts matters and interacts out there. And I think also because it will help us to recognize it and to stay on course as we're heading toward it. And as, you know, as has been said today, that there are certain things that are more important than others, and I think it will help us to determine what those are. So I just wanted to offer a vision of what it could look like in a thriving world when, you know, the topic of this event was to make sense of the current events and how to decipher the news. And so what would it actually look like? So I just invite you to close your eyes and have a glimpse of this experience that we had with Teresa, because it really is potent to be able to hold a positive vision as we manage our way through this to the solutions that we know are necessary and that we're committed to creating. And so a vision for me, as I allow myself to do this, of a thriving and different experience with the news is that, you know, when you turn on your computer or your TV, they're vibrant, happy people describing the remarkable new innovations coming to life in your neighborhood and all around the world. And that land that was once left barren because it was, you know, over-drilled and mined is now restored because people bring permaculture onto the land, and there's these new technologies that have created plants that, food crops that are half the size of traditional ones and use a third of the water and produce twice as much food. And that these are the kinds of innovations that are being described, and that the decontamination technology is, you know, improving at such phenomenal rate that even nuclear radiation is under control. And that in urban areas, all the strips, you know, it shows you in the urban area, instead of all the stripe, we're seeing that along the sidewalks have been dug up, and it's organic food gardens that are cultivated in the neighborhood so that everybody can gather together and share this good food. And that music and art are an everyday part of what people are engaged in. And every time we hear about an event in a different country, we also get exposed to the art and the music of that region. And that people who have different opinions and worldviews gather together respectfully and transparently to discuss their different perspectives. And that the sources of information that each person with a different worldview is relying upon is transparently made available so that we can, in fact, educate and think for ourselves in all of this. And that unsolved local and global problems are turned into high school projects so that the young, innovative minds who are eager and ready to can be considering and helping to solve these issues, and that it would be an interesting and robust conversation and lively interaction that takes place all over the place with regard to learning. And that the news that's reflected shows us a version of ourselves that makes us feel better about who we are and each other. And that it inspires us to bring our unique creativity out to share. And where the products we learn about are designed to empower our transformation and enhance our natural health and connect us to each other with genuine respect and appreciation. And I hold that vision with you all, and I know that we're here working toward that together, and I really value the moments that we share picturing that, because I believe it truly helps it to be so. So thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly. That was delightful.
Yeah, I actually think it's more important than we realize, and that the discipline of our thoughts and you know, my mom told me something as a woman was significant. She said, when I was growing up, she said, as a girl, never leave the mirror until you feel good about what you see. I didn't realize what a radical thing that was at the time, but it saved me, I'll tell you that, in the world of female indoctrination. And I think it's true, like, what if we had it that we don't leave, you know, reviewing these problems without ending on a vision of how it could be, so that we really put that out together at the same time and share that. And I really encourage you all, I honestly stayed up in ecstasy recently when I learned about Cal Washington and what it is that is this golden ticket of solutions that we're now learning with this new information that really gets us out of the court system and out of litigation and all these ways that these big corporations have of tying us up. Beyond the myth of the rule of law into quantum leaps and solutions and a chance to really have a strategy that, you know, meets where the rubber meets the road here on how we can bring this vision to be. So March 14th at noon, I hope you'll join us. And I thank everybody for participating today.
Now, I want to say that the hardest part of these calls for me is all of the people that we didn't get to bring in and hear from. And it's just part of the challenge of meeting in sizable groups in this way. It's come so far to be able to do this from our own homes and have a live discussion like this. So just know that we pay attention to the things that you put on chat, that you send into the website, and, you know, we'll be having these ongoingly in the future. So even if you didn't get to ask your question or make your comment yet today, just know that you're a really valued part of this group, and this is what's making the change possible when people come together and learn from each other respectfully and then are willing to go out and take action. So I, too, deeply appreciate your taking a couple hours on your Saturday. Nothing I'd rather do than hang out with you all in a very constructive and creative way. So enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yeah. Thank you.
So let's open up let's take the mute off, everyone, Goa, so that everyone can have a chance to say hello and goodbye to each other in person. It's chaotic, but it's fun.
Beautiful people. Goodbye, wonderful one.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you, Kimberly, for your congratulations. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Raj in the UK. Hello, goodbye.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
Love you guys.
See you next time.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Sachi Gra.
For joining us.
2 weeks.
I love technology. I'm hearing people from thousands of miles away.
Prosper.
Thank you, Foster and Kimberly, for who you are and being among us and being so brave. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, too.
Very brave.
It's people who know who they are that will make the difference.
Well, thank you. You're so true.
Thank you so much, Foster and Kimberly. You are so much
welcome.
Appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Foster and Kimberly. Thank you so much. Love and light to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Keep up the hard work.
All the best to everybody.
Good man.
Take care, guys.
Kiraj.
Thank you.
Hey, you too. Take care.
We hope to hear from you next time.
Yeah.
That's warm my heart. This is really nice. Cheers, guys. See you soon.
It's like a stack of the chairs.
And thank you to the engineer who keeps everything running.
Yay, Mitch.
Yes. Put a paper in the background and make things work. You know who you are.
Thank you.
Okay, go on. Why don't we close the room now so we can move along?
All right. Cheers, everyone.
Hey.
Hi.